weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 445 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. As always, thanks so much for listening. This week I have a fun interview with creator Todd Kelly about his book Project Titans, which is an engrossing comic in an anime style that really grabbed my attention. It's described this way. The son of Jekt has been looking forward to this day his entire life, the day of his 16th birthday, the day he ascends and his true name is finally revealed. But before he can reach his goal, he must survive the Night of the Nameless. Follow along as he meets his first Titans, deals with the fact that he may never see home again, and does battle with the Shade. Todd and I talk about how we put the series together, about conventions and how much we miss them and hope they come back soon, and look forward to things that he has coming for us in the future. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. A word of warning, near the end of the interview, we started to get some interference of some sort, so you'll hear some buzzing and things occasionally. I did my best to take it all out, but some of it I couldn't take out without interfering with what Todd had to say. So I hope you won't let that interfere with enjoying this interview. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Todd Kelly, the creator of a really fascinating series called Project Titans, which has a really strong anime feel to it. Feels like, you know, you're the writer and creator, right, Todd?
Yes, sir.
Okay, talk to me about, well, first thing, let's talk about your interest in comics and stuff like that. Have you always been a comics fan?
I have always been a comics fan. I grew up, obviously got into like the old X-Men animated shows and like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, stuff along those lines. And then once I found out that those animated shows were actually comic books, that was what kind of spurred me to, chase down those comics and try to find everything I could.
Great. So when did you make the jump from being a reader? Because that's where I am. I can never make the leap to a creator. I can tell you what's good, but I can't come up with it. When did you discover that you could do that?
I wrote it first. I started writing it as a series of short stories because I had no idea of how to actually turn it into a comic book. Like, I have no artistic ability whatsoever. I couldn't draw a stick figure to save my life. But I was actually at, I think it was my second or third Comic-Con that I had attended. I was down at the Tampa Bay Comic-Con, and I met a gentleman who was selling an indie comic. And so I was, walking through with one of my friends, and I'm in sales for a living. And, just if you've ever been to a Comic-Con, a lot of times, there's different artists and different vendors. Some of them don't look like they want to actually be there that day. So I just was walking around, and I just remember talking to my buddy and saying, like, man, if I was doing this, this is how I would do it. I would do A, B, and C. And I remember walking up and seeing this guy. And I mean, he was just doing everything I just talked about, plus a few more things. And it was just really cool. His presentation was great. His name was James. I don't remember the last name, but he did the Solar Flare series.
And James Hake.
Yeah, James Hake. So I remember meeting him for the first time and, him pitching Solar Flare to me. And this was before it was with Scout. Like, it was just back when it was indie. And I remember I sat there for like 20 minutes and just picked his brain about, like, man, how'd you do this? Like, how'd you get past this? And it was literally through that conversation with him. Like, I left that conversation and I remember I got home from Tampa Bay Comic Con and I remember like sitting down my wife, on the couch. It was just like, hey, I have an idea. What do you think? And that was pretty much rolled from then. And I think that was 4 years ago, maybe five. I'm not sure. Like I said, it was before they got picked up with Scout. Mm-hmm. So, cool. That conversation kind of started the whole whirlwind from there.
See, it's interesting because conventions will often do that. And I've been to many. It's so funny because if you're in a booth, sometimes you're next to somebody and you get to know them and you get to like you did, you get to find things out from them. I was in a booth next to Scott Hanna, who was a great artist. And he started talking to this one guy about something I had not considered about backgrounds and how important they are for comics. And, you know, right. Batman outside of Gotham isn't really Batman anymore.
Right.
And all that kind of stuff. And I said to him, I said, man, sometime I'm going to have you on my podcast because that was really interesting. I didn't know that. And that's the same thing you went through. You, when you go to the convention, it's meeting the people, I think, is almost worth the price of admission to be able to go and talk to people.
Oh, 100%. I love it. You know, I started going as a fan. I was lucky enough that the first Comic-Con I ever went to, a couple of my friends took me up to the New York City Comic-Con for my bachelor party right before I got married. And we went and did that and just road tripped it up there. And that was a great experience. But Tampa, that year in Tampa was really the first time that I actually got to like stop and talk to people. And again, I was just attending as a fan. And it was just so much fun to, you know, meet these different creators who were taking something that I wanted to do and they had actually done it. And I think seeing that happen was kind of when the light bulb went off where it's like, wow, I can do this too. Like I can make this happen.
Cool. Well, I'll have to tell because I know James and I'll have to tell him about your experience with him because he's now the president of Scout Comics.
Yeah, I think I remember seeing that. Yeah.
So he's got he's doing that with a lot of people. I think he encourages a lot of folks. And if he's behind you, he's behind you like 150%. So
I've only met him twice, and I definitely got that from the conversations. Again, like we were in a busy Comic-Con, and he took all the time to just sit there and talk and answer every question I had. And it was long after he had closed the sale. So, I mean, you could tell that it was very genuine and very real.
Oh, okay. So now, okay, you decided you could do it. How did you proceed from there?
Well, so first I decided to do it, and then I realized I had no idea what I was trying to do. So that was when I ended up reaching out to James a couple times and just started Googling, you know, kind of different options. And the biggest thing for me was, you know, finding an artist to work with. And so I just, you know, I had all these ideas. I had the story mapped out. You know, again, I had written it as a series of short stories. So I had taken it pretty far there. So I knew what I wanted to do, but it was, you know, finding that artist to start working with. And so I went through, you know, I kind of went through the carousel trying to work with different artists and, you know, found a couple bad ones that, you know, took my money and never actually delivered anything, learned my lesson there. You know, and I mean, that just happens. It is what it is. I joke around and say that's just kind of part of the learning process. So, you know, went through that, but I finally found a pretty solid artist and really just started working with him. And, you know, it was kind of off to the races there. Like once we did that, like he did a couple of character designs for me and, you know, I would give him my description of the character and I'm pretty open with the artist. I mean, I very much love the artist's interpretation. You know, I want to see what when I give them my description and my feel of the character, like what do they come back with? And so the guy I work with, his name is Keox Chan. I've worked with him throughout this entire project. And he just came back with some great character designs. Like you mentioned earlier, it's kind of got an anime or a manga feel to it. And I just absolutely loved it. I mean, literally everything he's come back with, like very rarely am I like, yeah, I don't like that. Like a lot of times he comes back and he's like, hey, I know you know, you said A, B, and C, and I added D. I think this really adds a lot to it. And I'm just like, wow, that's money. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can relate to that because, you know, I'm the editor of Stabbity Bunny, which is also a Scout comic that started out as an indie. Yeah. And I went through the process with Richard Rivera, the creator, and, you know, he was asking artists, just like you were, to like give character sketches so you get an idea of what the artist might do. First one was just, you know, nothing against the person. Right. He did a very realistic looking character, but it just didn't get us. You know, we just looked at it and went, yeah. And then the next one he went to, we sorted through a couple of people and he came with one. And I saw his drawing of one of the characters and I just went, wow. I said, that's amazing. Look how he did that. You know, and that person ended up being
clicks, right? Like, you're just like, wow, like, he gets it. Like, or they get it, like, whoever it is. Like, I mean, yeah, I've worked with a couple different artists on some different projects since, and I've met some different artists at the conventions. I think that's been one of the coolest parts about going to conventions. You know, I met you at literally the convention we met at was the first convention I ever worked as a vendor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, I mean, it was absolutely, I think it was the Infinity Toy and Comic Con in Kissimmee. And so right. It was the first show I had ever done. We literally got the books delivered, the first issue. We got it delivered the day before the show.
Oh, wow.
So they showed up the day before the show. I mean, the whole time I'm nervous the whole week whether or not they're going to show up on time. They ended up getting delayed, and that was what threw it off. But I remember we got down there. We drove down there. Me and my buddy are based out of Tallahassee. We drove down to Kissimmee that morning. And we got down there. We thought we had everything, but obviously it's the first show, so everything's going to go crazy. And we get there, and like, there's not even a table in my spot. They had given away my table, and then I had to go chase down a table. And once I chased down the table, didn't have a tablecloth, and we had forgot to pack the one we had. And again, it was just our first show, and we were just figuring it out. It was so funny though, because again, like we have pictures of us at our first show, and I mean, we don't even have a tablecloth. We've got a tiny banner behind us, but at the same time, we had an absolute blast. We sold well, like it was a lot of fun. But it's funny because I mean, it was a rough show.
See, I'm glad to hear that from you, because you know, the first one that we went to, I think we went to Heroes Con,
okay,
up in North Carolina,
right?
And the bad news was, we weren't aware how they laid things out.
Yeah.
And they had us on what they call an end cap at the end of a row.
Yeah.
And you literally could not get behind the booth
because
everybody else's booths were all crammed up against you, and you could, all you could barely do is stand behind it. We said, we can't do this.
Yeah.
So they moved us to a different place, but we hadn't thought through what we were going to do. He had a bunch of posters, but he had them laying on top of each other on the table. And, you know, stuff like that. And so we didn't do well that first weekend. I'm glad that it went reasonably well for you. But it was literally a week later where you went to Florida SuperCon.
Okay.
And during that week, I mean, Richard just sat and pulled everything apart. We had met a great guy by the name of Brad who told us some of the stuff we ought to consider. And he spent those couple days in between the convention retooling all this stuff. And the next con we went down to Florida SuperCon, had a great convention, sold a lot of stuff.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think I learned more at that first show than I probably have all the other shows combined. Because, again, I mean, you get into it. And it's funny because, I mean, I still stay in contact with all the people that were tables around me. So it's just, I don't know, there's something about it, man. It's a blast.
Well, you know, you have something in common with those people, and they can, like you said, like with James, sometimes they have done things that you haven't yet, and they can give you insight on what you might do.
Agreed. It's been a very cool experience because, you know, now we've, you know, fast forward almost a year later, and, you know, I'm in a position where I'm helping some of them out, and, you know, I've been at this point to more shows than some of them have since and different things. And, you know, they'll reach out, and obviously meeting kind of the different artists, like anytime you want to try and do variant covers, you know, now that you've actually, you know, met these different artists, like anytime I get a chance to give them some work or work with them, I'm all for it. Like I'd much rather work with somebody that, you know, I've met and just, I'm like, wow, this person, you know, they do great stuff. Let's do it.
Because it's funny you mention that, because we were up at New York and we were working in a group that included Ed McGuinness.
Oh, nice.
And it's through a whole bunch of conversations, it ended up that he ended up doing a variant cover for Richard.
That's awesome.
So you see that this is people may not make a lot of money at a con, but your connections are probably going to be worth vastly more than you probably could make at a table.
So I agree with that. It took me a few shows to really understand kind of the networking value. So I think it wasn't until I don't remember when that Kissimmee show was, but a few months later, I was in New Orleans, and so I did another book that I've done is a book called Atlas Rising, and it's a book for a YouTube influencer named Randy Santelli. He's a competitive eater, and I was hired by his management team, Further You. And so I worked on this book for him, helped kind of create the concept, wrote it, helped, you know, get the artists and just kind of manage the whole thing. And so we were in New Orleans and we were at, I think it was Big Easy Con. And so we're there and it's me, it's Randy and Randy's manager. And we have an artist alley table. And, you know, I'll tell you, like, again, is you know, this as an indie person out there. I mean, a lot of times when I go to these shows, I'll try and, you know, you're very much running it like a business. You're trying to keep the cost down. So if I'm doing a show where I've got a friend that lives by me, I'm most likely going to go crash with that friend and try to keep that cost down best I can. But, you know, in a situation like this in New Orleans where, you know, we, you know, just got a hotel and just very much we're like, okay, cool, we're here. You know, and we stayed at the same hotel that, you know, everybody from the con was staying at. And that was one of the first times that I actually went out and really networked outside of the actual show. Now, there's one thing, I mean, there's networking at the show, but networking outside the show, this was kind of a big like eye-opener for me, because once you started seeing everybody outside the show, it was just a whole nother opportunity to kind of talk and then, you know, help each other at the show. And that was a lot of fun.
So I think this is important for people to hear, especially we're starting to get rumblings of conventions that might be coming back or doing things. And I always feel that, like I said, that it's important to get behind the table and, you know, you will make some sales. And there, we went to New York, you mentioned New York, and we were in Artist Alley instead of up in the small press. Holy smoke, we sold through almost everything we had.
Yeah.
It was just amazing because, you know, most of the time we're sitting there kind of like, hey, you want to read here about a comic book? People were just constantly coming up and I could barely get the description of the book out before they would buy it. And I'd be
right.
Oh my gosh. It was just that New York was just that was fabulous. We want to go back. You know, next time they do that, we want to be back in Artist Alley if we can. But
oh yeah, those shows are the best. I did Collective Con about a week and a half ago in Jacksonville. And so this was, you know, one of the first ones that they were doing back. And, you know, again, talk about kind of from a networking perspective. So this was one of those situations where, you know, we purposely, my wife and I discussed it ahead of time. But, you know, I purposely, even though I have friends in Jacksonville, chose to stay in a hotel because didn't want to put any additional risk on anybody. So chose a hotel that was by the convention. And through, you know, just literally going down to get dinner that night, my Grubhub meal got canceled. So I angrily went down to the hotel bar to get an overpriced burger. And down there, I ended up running into Chris, who actually ran the convention. I ran into John Swayze, who is a voice actor. He does All for One in My Hero Academia. He does Lord Death and Soul Eater. And so I got to meet him and I got to meet Chuck. I don't remember Chuck's last name, but he does Android 17 and Dragon Ball. He does Hiei and Yu Hakusho. And sure enough, like really just got to hang out with them the entire Friday night. And sure enough, I mean, John ended up coming and buying my comics on Saturday and gave me a shout out during his panel on Sunday. Wow. And I was right outside the panels. And so he gives me a shout out at his panel and tells everybody, you know, he's bought my books and to come see me. And then all of a sudden I've got like 9-12 people in front of me just snatching them up. And I end up selling out of the inventory that I brought for the show.
Wow. See, that's the thing. It's hard to know how this is going to work. I'm glad to hear it was a big success because I'm hoping things will start to grind to get going again. I'm glad to hear that one did really well for you. And I'm hoping, I want to see more of these because the con experience is unique, you know, on both sides of the table.
Oh, it's amazing. I very much hope that they, you know, I saw that they just canceled Ocala. I believe that was today they announced it, which makes sense, you know, just from what I read. But yeah, I'd very much love to see some of the conventions come back. Collective Con did an amazing job of, you know, keeping the distance for everybody. I mean, you know what a typical Artist Alley, I mean, you're rubbing elbows with everybody. Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned, you know, you're don't even have a way into your spot without getting up in somebody's personal space. But you know, the way Collective Con did it, they had, I think Artist Alley was three, maybe four different rows. And they only had, I think, four tables to each row. So realistically, I mean, I didn't have anybody around me. Whatsoever. I mean, I pretty much had to shout to talk to another table.
Wow. That's some great stuff. So let's get to the book. I mean, I'd love, we can talk cons all the time because, you know, because I think you've got some lot interesting insights and stuff to do that. But let's talk about the comic. Okay. You got the artist.
Yes.
And now you started the process and stuff. Now, did you Kickstarter or did you use your own funds for it?
I used my own funds. So we discussed this again. So I'll reference my wife a few times. She's my business partner in this and business partner in life. So it was kind of one of those things where, I mean, I knew a little bit about Kickstarter, but on the other side of it, like we kind of made the decision, hey, look, well, we'll just save up. Let's figure out how much this whole thing is going to cost. And, you know, I knew I wanted to do at least the whole first story arc, you know, the first 5-6 issues. So I knew that I wanted to cover that. So just kind of figured out exactly how much all that was going to cost and just made it kind of my mission. Like, I'm going to save up all of this. We're going to set it aside. So this is never going to be like any money that we're counting on or anything. This is just, you know, this is our business and this is our side money. So we didn't do Kickstarter. We ended up, you know, funding the whole thing ourselves.
Wow. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. Now, of course, I've got to ask, what was it like when you saw your thing for the first time as a comic book?
It was the absolute craziest feeling in the world. It's just, you know, my kid won't listen to this for a while. She's only 16 months. So, I mean, it was almost close to holding my daughter for the
first time. Oh, wow.
She won't listen to it for a while, so we'll be all right.
Okay. So, we've talked, I've kind of gone around the book. Talk about what Project Titans is about.
Okay, so Project Titans, I won't spoil anything. I'll tell a little bit about it, and then, you know, if we want to end up kind of spoiling something towards the end, we'll just put a warning or whatever. So the first story arc is called The Knight of the Nameless, and what this is we follow our main character. He's referred to as the Son of Jet, and he is what's called, or he's been marked at birth, and so he's been raised without his name, and on his 16th birthday, he is going to ascend and become a demigod-like creature called a Titan. And he is also going to have, during this ascension, he's going to have his name revealed to him. So like a kid that, you know, is about to get his driver's license, you know, this, he can't wait for this day. This is his day. He wants it to happen. This is all he's been living for. And so naturally our story starts the day before that's supposed to happen. And everything just goes to chaos. And so his island is attacked by a legendary creature called the Shade. And it's up to him and his two young Titan guides, Halo and Hope, to try and fend off this creature, save everybody on the island, and make it and just survive until sunrise when he can finally kind of reach that moment that he's been waiting for.
It's interesting. Okay. The characters, are they based on anybody? The reason I ask that is, you know, I the first interview I ever did was with David Peterson from Mouse Guard. And I said to him, I said, are the mice patterned after like King Arthur's, you know, round table knights? Oh, no, they're my friends, he goes.
yes. Yeah, I would definitely say that some of the characters are either based off friends. The father character is definitely based off my dad, and just kind of some of his mannerisms and the way he tells stories. You know, it's just very much based off my dad.
That's kind of funny. You know, we talked about James Hake. You know, he actually wrote one of his friends into a comic, but what he didn't tell him was that he was going to get killed by the end of the issue. And when he gave him the issue, he goes, "Wait a minute, I died in here." He goes. So it's kind of funny how when those kinds of things, you got to be kind of careful when you do that stuff, and you know what you got to do with your friends. You know, nothing personal, of course. You just want to tell a good story. But
oh no, I definitely understand. When I did the book for Randy Santel, the Alice Rising book, I had to be, you know, pretty careful because I'm writing a character based on him. And so it was just, you know, the whole time, like, you're writing it, but you're also sending it to them and kind of getting like, hey, what do you guys think of this? Of almost like every page you get, you're like, hey, okay, is this okay? Give me the okay, because I can't move forward until you tell me this works, because I'm not going to do 20 pages of this. And then you tell me that I messed up on page two.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not the way to do it. So, well, I got to ask Dan, okay, it's a real interesting move to have your name, the name of your character not be known. When you start off the main character, most people, you know, you got Superman, right. Batman, all these people, they all have names once they do it. But to start with one nameless, that's kind of an interesting challenge. And when I was reading the materials you sent to me, I was kind of fascinated by the fact that he's, you know, there is a thing about teenage characters and stuff. We like coming of age stories right. A lot in comics. Talk about the development of nameless and, you know, why you went the route you did.
Well, I mean, to me, similar to you, it just kind of sounded interesting. So I knew what I wanted the name to be, and I kind of knew where I wanted the twist. And, you know, so I wrote it backwards and just kind of was like, okay, like I think this would be fun if we did it this way, and very much kind of set up this character where, you know, you think it's going to be this, and we kind of lay the groundwork for, you know, to go one way, and then really realize that we were kind of secretly laying the groundwork to go a totally different direction. The entire time, and eventually set up what's going to be his, you know, major conflict, you know, during any further issues and the continuation of the series. You know, one of my favorite comics was the original Ultimate Spider-Man, And, you know, I loved where, you know, I think it was Brian Michael Bendis said that, you know, he took his time with that whole first story arc, you know, as he developed Ultimate Peter Parker, you know, and it, he didn't really actually, like, he didn't turn into Spider-Man until kind of midway through the first arc and really start doing his battle. And so for me, it was kind of like, okay, I'm going to take my time. Like, you know, there's going to be conflict, you know, on a couple different levels. But, you know, I want to save the name pretty much until the very end and kind of have that be like, okay, boom, like that's, you know, now we're off and running.
Because one thing I liked very much about the character a lot was that he's learning and we as an audience are learning with him what's going on a lot. He gets in one of the early things is he's being told what the story is what's going on with him and what's going to happen and stuff like that roughly. And what that does for us is that we're actually involved in that. So I thought the way you did that was really engaging because, you know, as you sit there and read that, you kind of think, now, what if I was in that situation? How would I react?
All right. Well, thank you. That's, you know, 100% what I was going for. You know, I just want you to kind of be there with them and just be like, okay, cool, I can feel this. And then again, kind of towards that end where you finally get that reveal of what that name's going to be and you kind of make that moment, like you want them to feel with the character of just like, oh, wow.
Now, talk about the other characters, too. Hope, is that the ginger female?
Yeah, that's Hope.
Is she? She's not based on your wife, is she?
No. Nope. Wrote her long before the wife, but I'm sure some of my wife's more powerful characteristics will eventually make it in there. But no, Hope is, you know, just a character that, you know, wanted to write a strong female character. And then it was just very interesting because throughout the writing of this, you know, obviously I ended up having my daughter and it was one of those things too, where it's just like, wow, like, you know, I really want to write this strong female character, you know, that's going to, you know, be our main character's peer, but also kind of his mentor, for a little while and really just kind of taking him along the, you know, along the, teaching him the ropes and taking him along and just trying to make sure that he doesn't get himself killed.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, in this book is very likely to happen. You know,
yes, it almost does.
So, okay, talk about the other character, the guy that's part of the triad.
So Halo is, you know, he's going to be kind of that voice of reason type character. He's going to be the one that, you know, tries to talk them out of kind of doing the crazy things. But at the end of the day, usually gives in. But he's very much going to be that voice of reason. And hopefully at some point I would like him to end up being the rival type character as well. So we'll kind of see where that goes. I've written it a couple different ways. So as you know, sometimes it's just, you know, it's like, okay, cool. I've got options A, B, and C. We'll see what happens once I get there.
Well, sometimes the characters write themselves.
Exactly. I mean, sometimes you start going in one direction and you just really, you're like, okay, cool. I have no idea how I ended up here, but I love it. So let's do it.
Well, it's a natural progression. And you see, that's probably the leap that I can't make. And I'm just jealous of is the fact that you can do those things and those characters come. I mean, if I see it, I can tell you what's good, like I said, but I cannot make that jump to there. So I just have to admire it. And that's why you're the writer and I'm the reviewer and the podcaster, because I can't do those things, but that it gives me a chance to read your good stuff like that. Now I'm fascinated too by the shade.
Okay.
Talk about, you know, there's struggles in which, let's just say that they're not necessarily corporeal, as they might say. There's a battle in which, for example, one of them takes a sword and kind of cuts into them, and it doesn't necessarily put them out of action.
Right.
So talk about where the inspiration for the Shade came from and what you're trying to accomplish with that villain.
So with the Shade, one of the big things about it was, you know, we wanted it to be kind of this scary creature, and we purposely left out quite a bit of information about it, right? So we give a lot of backstory, I think, you know, in these first five issues, but, you know, about the Shade, we left it pretty vague. Now we know what that backstory is, but, you know, right now it's more or less, we want it to be kind of vague and we want it to be scary. But, you know, for the most part, the creature is more of an energy creature. And again, it's mostly nocturnal. And you kind of find out a little bit of, you know, like who its bosses are and kind of what's going on there. But I mean, again, right now it's a creature that one of the scariest things about it to everybody else is that they just don't know anything about it. They know it's this bad creature that's going to come and, you know, it can hurt and it can kill people. And, you know, it's implied in there that it also can, you know, remove an individual's energy from them. And, you know, so it's kind of, I guess, for lack of a better term, like the vampire of this world, where, you know, it comes and sucks this life energy called Stana out of people. And, you know, it again, it's kind of their boogeyman, right?
Mm-hmm. Now, I've got to mention, because right now I'm looking on my screen, and I've got the cover to issue 2 up.
Yes.
And the cover is really fascinating because you see the three main characters in the front, but behind them, you see the shade, or at least one of the shade, and it's got this glowy white eye, and it looks to be sort of a mouth. It almost looks like there's teeth in there, you know, kind of stuff, and very dark background of it. I mean, that's scary. I mean, at this point, I got to ask, how much of that did your artist come up with? How much of that did you have in mind when you started this? Did it evolve? How did the shade get to be like they are?
It has been a complete evolution. So if you take a look at the first cover, which is a black and white cover. So that was done. I lived in Jacksonville. One of the first people that I ever told about my story was a good friend of mine named Forrest Davis, and he was an artist. And so he ended up doing that first cover for me. And, you know, we ended up going with a different design for the shade. But whenever it came time to actually print the book, I just kept going back to Forrest's cover. And I was like, I can't not use this. Like, he did this for me. I love the artwork. It's absolutely amazing. We've gone with a different design for the character, but this is literally the first piece of art that shows my story. And so just, it had to be my cover. And then whenever we went with the issue or the cover for issue 2, that was me and the current artist, Keox, just kind of working through. And again, I told him a pretty rough idea of what I wanted to do. And he wanted to kind of more or less hide the shade kind of in the background because that's where the shade makes its first appearance at the end of that book. And he didn't want it to be too obvious whenever you just looked at the cover and you knew what was going on, because obviously we had shown kind of a different variant of him on the first cover. So that was kind of his nod of just kind of hiding it in there.
So that's the main thing about the shade, is that they absorb energy from people. Is that the biggest thing? But you said they kill as well.
They do. So they absorb, they kill. They are, you know, the big thing in there is they are the forgotten followers of the Four Horsemen. And they are just right now, you know, they haven't had any leadership in a long time, and they're just kind of roaming monsters. And, you know, they're just known as like the big bad scares that, you know, like a lot of people talk about, kind of, again, similar to the boogeyman. There's a lot of people that know about the shade but have never seen one. And so it showing up on this island is a very big deal.
So all this, of course, is gets in the way of the nameless character.
Yes, you know, ruins his night.
Yeah, so this is what the story is all, these all come together, and that's where the conflict comes in. And what's interesting is that I really have to say that you've got the anime feel down. And was that your intention? I mean, did you originally want it to have an anime feel, or was it when the artist came across this artist that moved that way? Because the dialogue really feels like, and I've watched some anime, and I it really feels like that to me, the way they always kind of say things with an exclamation point at the end of the sentence.
So I'm a very excited individual, so that may just be how I talk in general. But yeah, it definitely, you know, I wanted to go with that. I'm a huge fan, you know, I'm a huge fan of comics, but I'm a huge fan of manga as well. And, you know, anytime I can get it, I'm one of those individuals that, you know, I started watching Naruto and then, you know, got caught on the fillers and realized that the manga was ahead of it. So I started reading the manga too, you know, because I just was impatient. And, you know, I love it. You know, one of my buddies sent me the story, All You Need Is Kill, a couple weeks ago. Literally, he read it, Amazoned it over to me, and I ended up reading it, and I absolutely loved it. I've just always been a fan. So whenever I decided I was going to do this, and, you know, that we were going to do it independently, and, you know, just you know, go to shows, and you know, we've sold pretty well at shows, and it was kind of one of those things where it's like, well, I'm going to do it. I want to do it the way that I want to do it. And so it was, you know, let's go with kind of an anime feel in a comic book. And so that was pretty much what we were looking for out the gate. And then the artist just, you know, took it and ran with it. And it's just one, you know, once you start working with somebody, you start figuring out what they can do. And you're just like, oh, wow, I want to do it even more. Like, let's do this, let's do that. And you just run with it.
It's very cool. Well, it's very, you know, anime in that sense. And I really like the way that the characters develop and they start to bounce off of each other. And it's kind of fun to see them learn from each other. You know, they are growing, you know, they're at that age where they're still trying to figure out, you know, what they want to be when they grow up. And especially in this circumstance, that's a real dangerous place to be. So it's really interesting how the characters grow. And that's one of the things I like about the book particularly is the way that it develops. You know, things, some anime that I've seen is kind of static, you know.
Right.
Little things happen within a certain circumstance. And sometimes I get a little bored with that. But yours was very engrossing because things change, things develop. We get to understand and see more as things unfold in front of us. And I always like that kind of a thing. I think you do it real well.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
So let's talk about where you are right now. You've got, what, 5 issues?
Yeah, we got 5 issues that are done. And so actually Collective Con was the first show where we sold all 5. So I would have printed 4 and 5 sooner, but once all the shows started canceling, it just didn't make a whole lot of sense. So we didn't print 4 and 5 until we actually had a show that we could, you know, go and sell them. And I enjoy the feedback. So, you know, when it was really cool when, you know, you're in there Friday and you're selling and, you know, people come back on Saturday and they're like, hey, I already read it. I loved it. Like, that was awesome. I loved what you did with the name. Like, that was perfect. And, you know, they bring back their buddy to buy from you. So I had to launch it at a show.
Mm-hmm. Great. That's really good. Now, let's say somebody's interested in Project Titans. Let's hope that they are. How do they get a hold of copies of this? You get physical copies? Do you get digital copies? How do you do it?
Yeah, right now we'll do the physical copies. So we have a website. It's projecttitanscomics.com. There's an option there where you can go in and buy. We've got a store through Store Envy where you can go in and buy through there. And then we'll just go ahead and ship them to you. You can buy the whole set. And then we're adding an option where you can just buy 4 and 5 because we were selling 1, 2, and 3 for a while at shows. So anybody who bought 1, 2, and 3, there's going to be an option where you can just buy 4 and 5.
Mm-hmm. What about digital versions? Are you making those available?
I'm going to probably in the next week or two. We redid some of the lettering on some of the first. It was one of the things I learned at the shows was I met a couple different artists and they gave me some pointers. So we had redid some of the lettering on some of the books. So we're going to launch those probably in the next month or so. We'll get them all online.
See, lettering is one of those things that if it's done well, you don't notice it. If it's not done well, you notice it. So
right.
It's one of those things that has to work. And, you know, I've known a lot of people who have told me that I had to go back and rework the lettering because it didn't quite do the things that I wanted it to. Well, it's like theme music in like a movie. If you sit there and you're paying attention to the music, then that's not the purpose. The purpose is to get you into the story.
Right.
So it's the same thing with this lettering is there to communicate and get the story going. But sometimes it gets in the way. And so I can understand if you want to go back and make some changes to it and update it some.
One of the things I liked, and I mean, the first set of lettering that we had was functional and it worked. But I don't know that it added to the story. And so the lettering that we redid everything with, you know, we went back and added emphasis on certain words and restructured a few things. Kept all the dialogue the same, just kind of reworked maybe some of the flow sometimes. And it just, I love it. Like, I mean, I could not be happier with how it's done. I didn't realize it wasn't something I wasn't a fan of again until, somebody kind of helped point it out to me. And I'm like, oh, wait, you're right. And then, just being a perfectionist, had to go back and get it fixed.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's good to do that, though, because what's going to happen is when people get to read it, and, you know, this just screams cartoon or animated series to me.
That is the question we get all the time, and it's a great compliment. Like, I love it, but they're always like, so when's this going to be a series? And I'm like, hey, man, I'm just selling the shows right now. I was like, once you know the person, introduce them to me. I'm good. I got you.
Well, you know, a lot of creators tell me that the thing to do is make a good comic.
Mm-hmm.
And if it blossoms into something else, like I don't know if you've ever heard, there's a series called Cleopatra in Space.
I believe I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah, Mike Mayhack, who does it, is, and I'm trying to get him on the podcast here. I saw him at almost every convention we were at. He was selling those books, and they're all ages. But when I say all ages, don't think that that's a put down.
Right.
It's the kind of a story you can read. And what's happened with that actually, they just came out with the Peacock Network.
Right.
And Cleopatra in Space is on there now as an animated show.
That's awesome.
And I watch it, and I wrote to him, and I said, you know, I subscribed to Peacock just to get that show.
Nice.
Because it's very true to the books, and the books are kind of fun. You know, Cleopatra, out of her, you know, the place where she's normally, you know, in charge of everything, it's really interesting. She's trying to figure out her way in an entirely different culture. Stuff
That's
like
fun.
That.
I'll have to check it out.
It's really good. I really like it. And it's hopefully I'll get to talk with him. I'm trying to work something out with him to talk with him, because I have a boatload of questions I'd love to ask. See, if you listen to this podcast, you know, one of the things that I love is a strong female lead. And that's why I think that Hope stands out to me, is because she's a very strong, powerful character who is feminine and yet powerful.
Right.
You know, and that I think I always say this on this podcast, but it's so true, is that we have explored men for decades. You know, men have been scoundrels and scientists and you name it. But I don't think we've nearly scratched the surface on female characters. So I'm always interested.
I agree with you 1,000%. We've got the next story arc. So we're working on issues 6 and 7 now. And we're also working on an issue 0. And we've got a fun and powerful female character that's going to get introduced. Actually, 2 that are going to get introduced in the next arc. And it's definitely getting to the point where, like, I'm really excited to just be like, so I'm like, all right, I can't wait to get to this issue so I can introduce this character. And I think one of the downsides of being independent is obviously you have the freedom where you're just like, well, if I want to introduce him sooner, I can. And then you have to, like, stop yourself and be like, nope, wait till this issue. It makes sense. Don't rush it.
That's right. So unlike Batman, I often say this on a podcast too, is that Batman has to end up where he started. Somebody else has to come along and pick it up.
Uh-huh.
So yeah. I'll get a kick out of that. So, but you don't have to do that. You can go wherever you want and do whatever. That's kind of a cool thing. I like that. So, okay. So the books are, I have to say though, I don't think this, in my reading of it, the story arc ends in 5. If I'm not correct, there's more story to tell.
Oh, there's a lot more story to tell. So there's a lot more story to tell. To me, that's the wrap up of that, again, kind of the Night of the Nameless. So we wrap up that first kind of 24-hour period. But I mean, issue 6, you know, at that sunrise. So we kick issue 6 off. The Night of the Nameless changes the entire world. You know, and issue 6 starts off by kind of showing the ramifications of, you know, what that's going to be like and how it's going to start to affect, and you know, how people are going to try and hide, you know, who Nameless became and all that fun stuff. So you know, so here we can put out a little bit of a spoiler warning. If you have not read the books, go ahead and hit pause and go buy the books, read the books, and then come back, because I'll like, we're going to talk about the name, because I just think it's fun and I don't ever actually get to talk about it with anybody. So the name that's revealed is that he is War, and he's the Fourth Horseman.
Right.
And so this was a lot of fun knowing the whole time, like, okay, cool. He's actually, you know, one of the air quotes bad guys. So it's kind of one of those fun mixes where now we get to play with this character who's been raised thinking, hey, I'm going to be a good guy. And, you know, the whole world's going to view him as a bad guy. Again, kind of as one of those boogeyman type characters exists, and the whole world is going to fight down by his existence. And it being a lot of fun. So it was, you know, writing the first 5 issues was a blast, but I'm definitely really excited about, you know, the stuff we're doing with 7 and issue 0 as well, because, you know, now all that's out there and, you know, you just get to run with it and kind of show how it affects the world.
Mm-hmm. So do you have any idea how many issues you have in mind for Project Titans?
I mean, it's going to be definitely something I do for a while. I'd say, you know, in terms of writing, I can go, you know, 24, 30 issues, depending on, you know, where we take it. But it's definitely a lot of content. Like I said, I wrote quite a few short stories, and it was really easy because, being a big fan, I kind of unintentionally broke the chapters down into basically content for comic books. So it just kind of worked out that way. So, yeah, I mean, we've got quite a few story arcs. I mean, obviously there's, you know, the other horsemen that are out there, and there's a whole world to explore. So we've got quite a bit that we can work with. So it just really comes down to, you know, obviously treating it like a business and, you know, being smart about it. So I'd love to, you know, crank out 12 issues a year. But, you know, right now with not as many conventions to go to sell at and to help you kind of grow your audience. It's just not super intelligent.
Now, what about Kickstarter or Indiegogo or other kind of crowdfunding? Have you thought about that?
I think it's something that I'm going to have to do some more research on. It's definitely something that I've – so, again, I'm in sales for a living, and, I've done well at every show we've gone to. So, at first, it was just like, we'll just go do shows. Like, we're turning a profit at every show we go to. We're selling well. We're getting great feedback. And, you know, the first thing was like, let's go do shows for a year or two, build the connections, make these networking connections, and then let's just see where we're at from there. But, obviously everything kind of changed whenever the, show started getting canceled. So it's forced me to explore different options. I was actually, before we got started, I was listening to Tyler James from Comics Tribe, and I was listening to one of his, podcasts that he was doing, talking about Kickstarter and everything.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, something to see how it works out, whatever works out best. So, okay, if people want to follow you and keep up with your projects and stuff, how do they do that on social media? You would say the name of the website again?
So the website is projecttitanscomics.com. And then we're on Instagram at TCalWrites. And then we're on Facebook as well, just under Project Titans.
Okay, very cool. So it's a lot of fun to read. And if you like anime, you're probably going to really like this one too. But even if you don't, I think the characters are going to grab you, and the setup is really interesting. Like something different that I haven't read before. And that somebody who's read as long as I have, that's always a pleasure to find. So
I very much take that as a compliment. That's awesome.
Well, you should. It's called Project Titans. And it's a very fascinating book, and we might see Todd at conventions when they start to gear up again, sounds like.
Yes, definitely.
Sounds good. Well, Todd, just keep it up, and we'll have to talk again in the future when maybe issue 6 starts to rear its head and starts to come out. We'll have to talk about that. So, keep up the good work. It's great reading.
Thank you.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but it's a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Please be back next time when I'll be speaking with another great comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.